views expressed by the hosts are entirely their own and in no way represent the thoughts or intentions of the original author.
This podcast is a discussion shared to spark thought and conversation on the characters and themes of this novel.
The interpretations presented in this podcast are just a few of the many possibilities. Listeners are encouraged to read along and share their own analysis of the text.
Though the hosts speak mostly within the constraints of this book, series and extended universe spoilers may be discussed with or without warning.
Explicit language, as well as themes of sex, violence, abuse, depression, self-harm, and death will recur throughout this podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Book Talk for Book Talk, a podcast where we deep dive into the writing of your favorite novels.
This season, we're exploring Sarah J. Maas's first installment in the Crescent City series. This is Jack.
And I'm Amy. This is part one of this week's episode. Stick around for part two, which releases on Thursday. Welcome to Book Talk for Book Talk, a literary podcast where we deep dive into the writing of your favorite novels.
This season, we've been deep diving into Sarah J. Maas's A House of Earth and Blood. We have concluded the season. If you've missed it, there's 15 episodes for you to go through.
And to wrap up the season, we are discussing listener thoughts that we've received via email.
And honestly, I'm really impressed with how professional this was so far.
Because we have imbibed.
Imbibed by vibing.
We have consumed.
Sushi and alcohol.
So you know what?
Liqueur.
Liqueur.
Liqueur. I can't say liquor anymore.
Because it sounds like lick her.
And now I'm ruined. Or made, I can't tell.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're here for a good time. We're here to read your thoughts. And Amy hasn't read any of these. I've skimmed through them, so...
We'll see what happens. Before we jump in, because we're not quite sure where our listener thoughts are going to take us, let's just say we have spoilers for the entire Crescent City series, including up to book three. So all of ACOTAR, all of Crescent City, that's on the table.
Yep. The first one comes from Jacqueline Rose. How pretty is that?
That is a very pretty name.
God, Jacqueline Rose. Okay. Big fan of Jacqueline's. Hello. I adore your show and have listened from the beginning. In this week's episode, you brought up how no one went to look for Victoria at the bottom of the sea trench once they had access to the submarine. My thought process was that Victoria's punishment was specifically chosen to drive her insane. I imagine there must have been some kind of conversation regarding how damaged she may be by the time they were able to retrieve her, and if she would then pose a threat to society if there was no way to negate the damage. A bit of Schrödinger's cat situation there.
And I
did my best.
It was an admirable attempt.
Schrödinger's cat. I don't envy whoever opens the box. Would you like to explain the cat in the box?
I don't remember Schrödinger's cat.
I do. I'm
Go ahead then. Educate us.
My hands raised.
Please, Jack. Not Rose. Jacqueline, not Rose.
Oh. Sorry, I'm not the pretty name one. So basically, he came up with this theory that if you put a cat in the box, is the cat alive or dead?
And it
could basically be either, it could be neither, and it's like you don't know until you open the box. Mm-hmm. I did the most simple explanation of it, but it's just like you don't know what you're going to get, because like if you open the box and it's alive, you know, oh shit. If you open the box, it's dead. Oh shit.
Yeah.
That is the most basic example of the cat in the box.
Thank you for explaining it, because I know of Schrödinger's cat, did not know the premise behind it. Let me just say this. If my friend Jack was at the bottom of the ocean, I would confine you.
Oh, thank you.
I would put you in a prison cell and open the box.
No.
Just to see, as a precaution.
Uh-huh.
And then I would try to rehabilitate you.
You thought I've gone that crazy that
Honestly,
far?
Honestly, in 6 or 7 months, I don't think so.
I feel like you'd hold out pretty well.
I think you would hold out.
I think both of us for the first 3 months would just be nice for the peace.
Oh, yeah. Thank the Lord. It's so pretty down here.
I know. Like, this is great. This is lovely. I got that right. Hypothetical cat may be considered both alive and dead simultaneously because its fate is linked to the random event that may or may not occur. Nailed it. Nailed it. I would do the same to you, except I just open it.
Welcome home.
I'd be like, you know what? You want to let loose? Do it. Go rip a few heads off. I support this.
Honestly, truth.
Right? You've been locked down there the whole time. I just wish that there was more of a conversation around this.
At least have the conversation.
And if you do think she's going to go absolutely psychotic, then that seems like a great weapon to have.
Honestly, true. Bring her to the battlefield.
Right?
Yeah.
Just kind of open her up right in the middle. It's like there's just been zero thoughts about her. And, you know, justice for Victoria.
Justice for Victoria.
What? Imagine that they open her up and she's like, what did I miss? What's the first thing you tell her? You're Bryce. Or Hunt, whoever you want to be. You let her in. You let her out. And she's like, what's going on? What did I miss?
I got this great new tattoo between my tits. Want to see?
Yeah, she did miss that, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it would be like, guess who the new bitch alpha is?
Nice.
Like, I would go straight for the tea. Yeah, I'd be like, oh my God.
I could do that.
Yeah.
Guess who shot Sabine in the face?
Me. Nailed it. This next one comes from Sierra. Hey, Jack and Amy. Just wanted to share some connections I made while listening to the podcast about some of the gems in the Heart Gate and with the White Opals in particular. SJM may be misleading us in a house of earth and blood. Firstly, the old square is represented by a ruby and a heart. Later, Hunt describes Bryce's hair as shining like the heart of a ruby, and the Heart Gate is where Bryce makes the drop to save Hunt and whispers, quote, the three words that meant more than anything, for the first time. Clues to Bryce and Hunt's love being mates, perhaps? The CBD is represented by a pair of wings, particularly for angels, and an opal. This has multiple connections to everyone who will eventually betray Bryce throughout the book. If opal represents the CBD, then it's not a far leap to assume opals represent Micah, the head of the CBD, who ends up being the main antagonist. Hunt gifts Bryce a white opal, foreshadowing his betrayal, for getting caught spying synth from the Viper Queen, whose snake form was, quote, moon white cobra with scales that gleamed like opals. Mm. She betrays both Bryce and Hunt in the synth deal. To tie in the loving way Hunt describes Bryce's hair, when Bryce fondly describes Danica's hair, it's also very gem-like. Her hair is, quote, silvery blonde with specks of amethyst, sapphire, and rose. Danica's hair could easily be described as opal-like, and all she does is betray Bryce's trust. The fragility of opals indicates the fragility of trust the reader should have in those characters. Would love to hear your thoughts. Thanks for all the work you put into the podcast. It's given depth to the bond my mom and I have created through our shared love of SJM.
Aww.
What does it feel like to be smarter than us?
Holy fuck, she's Sierra. Shit. Like, you are smarter than us.
I mean, and I'm not pretending like we're geniuses here, but she just swept the floor with...
Oh my gosh. Yeah, wow. All those connections with the opal. The heart gate and the ruby, I feel like we didn't touch on the ruby per se, but we did touch on the heart gate in the last episode. The opal, though, between Micah, CBD, and the Viper Queen, and Danica's hair, totally.
Absolutely.
I totally see it. And I have chills and goosebumps. And
I didn't even realize how much, like, gemstones were really incorporated. Like, of course, like, her hair, amethyst, sapphire, the other one.
Rose.
That other one. I mean, yeah, like, it really is very gem heavy.
And let's recall that we've talked about the fact that opals are considered a brittle stone.
Yeah.
Brittle, like, all the relationships she's had with Danica, the first initial relationship with Hunt, and with the Viper Queen.
Yeah. That is great.
I'm speechless.
I'm speechless. I'm embarrassed.
For us. Not for Sierra.
No, I'm embarrassed. I'm like, sorry, Sierra. I feel like I failed you. That was great. That was incredible.
See, and this is why we always say the reading is up to interpretation, and we are just one interpretation.
Oh, yeah, we are not the end-all be-all in the slightest.
No, and Sierra's interpretation adds such depth.
Yeah.
To the analysis. Like, this will now be canon in my brain.
Yeah, no, that's the kind of thing that something that you would bring up in a paper that a teacher would be like, there it is. That's the A.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was great.
Yeah, that was amazing.
You're going to have to think about this one.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. The next one comes from Kristen. Do you think the wolves in Crescent City get zoomies?
Oh, 100%.
How does it look like? And are they wolves or are they humans? Are they humans who get zoomies?
Oh, I mean, I bet if they are humans getting zoomies, they transform into a wolf because only the wolf can satisfy the zoomies.
Yeah.
Because they can probably run faster as wolves.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And spin around. Because if you're trying to spin around and catch your tail as a human, that's just embarrassing.
Right. Right. Yeah, I imagine it's like someone who's had way too much caffeine.
That would be us.
Yeah, that would be us.
Yeah.
Not at this moment.
It's like when in college we got, what were those drinks that we had with the Red Bull? And the alcohol?
Oh, no, that was only you.
All right.
It was a vodka Red Bull.
That's my zoomie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's accurate, though. Just a lot of caffeine.
Yeah. Just like, wow!
Okay, so I can imagine Danica having zoomies.
Oh, 100.
I can imagine Bryce, like, encouraging the zoomies.
Yeah. I could see them all having, like, a massive orgy after the zoomies.
Wow!
They all run off into the forest, and they get really, like, physical and bitey and wrestling, and then they have sex.
Can I just be honest with you?
What?
Hey, listener, can I just be honest with you, too? I'm going to ask a question, and Amy, you're going to have to tell me if I'm allowed to keep it in or not.
Okay.
And I don't know if I want to know the answer.
Okay.
But I was like, we read Bride.
Yes.
We haven't talked about Bride.
No.
But I am a sucker for a werewolf.
Yeah.
And I feel like those are hard to do well. So I've been on a werewolf kick. And I've been listening to this werewolf book, and they didn't indicate anything, but I was just like, is it bestiality if one is a wolf and the other one is human?
But they're both werewolves.
Yeah.
And one's shifted and the other hasn't.
But like, let's say if one's not a werewolf, but their partner is a werewolf.
And they have sex while in werewolf form?
Or? Yeah, I'm saying it's not great. It's bestiality.
I think yes. Yes.
But what if they're both werewolves? And one's a human form and the other one's a werewolf form. So then it's not bestiality that way?
I still think it's bestiality.
Yeah, I don't want it written. I don't want the scene, but I just want to know what the thoughts are.
I think there's a reason why we haven't seen this scene.
Like, when you say massive wolf orgy, who's fucking? Wolves or humans?
Wolves. Or human, but exclusively wolves. Or exclusively human.
And then if you suddenly discover you're a wolf shifter out of nowhere, and you discover your mate, how is the first thing you're not saying, like, all right, we gotta try this?
Oh my god.
Not like as a I don't mean human wolf. I mean wolf wolf, right? Like,
oh yeah, 100.
Wolf wolf. You're like, okay. Let's go try wolf wolf. I don't mean human wolf. Yeah, no, I'm just like wondering, like, because I agree, werewolf orgies are totally a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Was Danica a part of it? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Was Bryce upset she didn't get the invite?
Absolutely. Actually, Bryce doesn't know. It's another secret Danica kept from her.
Do you think Danica ever hooked up with
Connor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? I got mad.
I bet it was when they were, like, teenagers.
Yeah, but I bet she didn't tell Bryce.
Oh, 100.
We were just talking shit right now.
We've had some alcohol. And I can tell because I keep saying 100.
100. That is true. That is so true. Okay. This next one comes from Becca. It's a little bit of a long one, so stick with it. Hi, Jack and Amy. Longtime listener, first time writer-inner. writer-in? Feels like a bit of a cul-de-sac situation. I absolutely love your analysis and hearing how you interpret different parts of these books. One thing I know, y'all, Jack especially, have mentioned a few times that if you have taken issue with the Crescent City series is the Autumn King and his lack of redemption, particularly when SJM made it a point of showing us slash having him express that he has remorse for some of these past actions. I totally understand your take on this, and I was honestly surprised his story turned out the way it did. But upon reflection, I decided I really liked the choice made with his character, and it really comes down to messaging about abusers and what makes them redeemable. Shit. I'm about to have my mind changed, and I'm mad about it.
I'm excited.
I'm sad. All right. The Autumn King, and I think the same argument can be made for Sabine, is a fantastic example of an abusive parent, quote, feeling bad for what they put their child through, but doing absolutely nothing to really change how they treated their children. The Autumn King says that he has regrets, but he continues to try to manipulate and control both Bryce and Rune in the same way as he always has, and continues to get angry whenever Bryce, in particular, since Rune is a bit more compliant, does not comply. I think SJM was making a very deliberate point that abusers plus remorse minus change are still abusers and do not deserve redemption or forgiveness for their bad feelings. Too often we are ready to forgive, both in fiction and in real life, abusive or terrible parents or partners because they say, golly, I feel bad about that, and then sacrifice themselves for something equally dramatic for the main character. I think SJM was really saying, fuck these abusive parents and fuck unearned redemption with this one. I probably am not articulating this particularly well. I disagree. But that was my takeaway with both the Autumn King and his regrets over Ember and Bryce and Sabine, whom we get a glimpse of her loving Danica and, quote, trying to protect her, and how their stories have played out. I enjoyed the way she flips it on its head and had him basically double down on his belief that he's right and his children are the problem, and then gets his ass and head handed to him. I also think that the emphasis on Bryce's similarities to him drive home that it's not about the traits they hold slash share, it's about what they choose to do with it. Bryce and the Autumn King have similarities, sure. They have the same temper, but Bryce, guided by Ember and Randall, chooses to harness her anger to protect herself and others. And the Autumn King uses his to justify his desire to control and punish those he considers subservient to him. And I think that's the defining difference. Bryce, with the different influence and priorities, could slash have been like her father, but with the influence of her mom and dad, she was able to become a better person than he ever was, and to control and utilize those shared traits in a better way. I also think these similarities could possibly be the part of Bryce's resilience slash reluctance to rule. She has seen what someone she is similar to, whether she's consciously admits it to herself or not, looks like as a monarch and has no interest in risking becoming that. I hope looking at it from this perspective at least makes it a little bit more palatable for Jack, since I know you've been frustrated since Crescent City 3 came out, even if you ultimately decide this is dumb and wrong. Thank you for such an amazing podcast and for the time and effort you put into it. Release days are always a high point in the week.
Thank you. That was Becca.
Yeah.
So I have two thoughts.
Yeah.
This is not one of those thoughts. Becca, you were fantastic.
Yeah.
Don't doubt yourself. This reminds me of something my psychiatrist said to me this week that I told you. The law prosecutes behavior, not thought. Do not prosecute yourself greater than the law. Yeah. And that's what we're seeing with both the Autumn King and Sabine. It doesn't matter how much they think they love their children or regret their actions, their behavior is still abusive.
Thought means nothing when your actions suck.
Right, exactly. I also wonder to what extent for both the Autumn King and Sabine, are they sociopaths?
Yeah.
And I genuinely think they are. I think they lack empathy. I think they're sociopaths who perform certain types of emotions, including remorse, to be acceptable to other people.
Okay, get ready for this. Are they sociopaths or are they parents of a generation? This isn't me coming after my mom or any moms or any, like, this isn't coming after
anybody.
This isn't coming after a specific person.
Yeah.
I think this comes after being raised by a general generation of, like, as a society being told, we're right, deal with it.
Yeah.
Or I had to go through this, so therefore it's fine.
Yeah.
Becca, good job. You've convinced me. And now I kind of regret my choices. Where it's like, you know, I would love to know what SJM's initial intentions were.
Yeah.
However, you have 100% sold me on this because it does remind me that SJM does dabble, not dabble. She dives headfirst into the concept of abuse. Look at Tamlin.
Yeah.
Look at what she did there. So why wouldn't she talk about being a parent and abusive?
Yep.
You know, I know she's a mom and I'm sure it must be hard going into parenting and trying to, like, weed out what you went through and what kind of trauma do I want to give my kids?
Yeah. How much do you want to be your parents and how much do you not want to be your parents?
Yeah.
I remember my mom telling me as a child, I am making conscious decisions to not be my mother.
Same.
And that's a hard thing to accomplish, I think.
Yeah.
When that's all you know.
Yeah. It is a really, really hard thing to do. And I think that it's a really fair point. I agree, Becca. I think like you have changed me. You have swayed me. I love this concept. I feel like if SJM wanted to like really drive it in, it would have been nice to have Sabine and the Autumn King be opposites.
Yeah, rather than the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that like it would have been nice to set them both up and then really show the difference. But I do like what Becca said about like having Bryce look at her like, oh my God, I'm compared to him all the time. Look what kind of king he was. Therefore, I don't want to be that. Spot on.
Yeah.
Spot on.
However, in what ways are Randall and Ember not the opposite? Because they are, to some extent, also very micromanagey.
Yeah.
Randall wouldn't let Bryce move until she proved that she was able to outsmart him or outplay him or out-wrestle him, whatever.
The fact that Bryce has to clean her apartment to video call her mom.
Right. Like, they have their own tics, right?
Yeah.
That some people don't appreciate in their parents. And to me, they do offer that reflection. And that's why Bryce never puts up with the Autumn King's bullshit.
Yeah.
Because she knows what it is to have micromanaging parents who love her and support her and are not abusive.
Yeah.
And that's why Rune struggles with the Autumn King as his parent, because that is all he's known.
He's known that, and he's known a mom that we've never met.
Who is absent.
Who's completely... I thought we'd meet her in the third book.
I thought so, too. But what that tells me is she is neglectful.
Yeah, it's different type of neglect.
Yeah.
I mean, you could really look at it of like, here are three different categories of parents. Mm-hmm. The Autumn King, that's like flat out in your face abusive. Ember and Randall, who try but aren't perfect.
Right.
And then Rune's mom, who just straight up bounces.
Yeah.
And each of them brings in their own trauma. I always like to joke and say whenever I have kids, I would like to just enough trauma to make my kids funny.
Which I appreciate.
That's all I want.
And I don't want to feel guilty about causing anybody trauma, so I'm not having children.
You can cause mine trauma. It's fine. That's cool. Oh, wow. The next one comes from Ray. I'm pretty far behind on your show, mostly because I haven't read Crescent City 3 yet and didn't want any accidental spoilers. That's good because we gave up. Like trying to do spoiler alerts.
If you've lasted this long, you know that we're not reliable.
No, we're not. Anyway, I'm on episode 8 where you discuss feet fetishes and how Jack would be okay with, I would be okay with it if they paid for her pedicures. As someone with experience with a man with a foot fetish, I just want you to know it's not all pedicures and foot baths. Some folks are going to want that, I'm sure, and many foot fetishes will enjoy that too. But in my experience, it's the sweaty, stinky feet that some of them crave. Just been on a long run and on a 100-degree day? Wear high heels to work all day? Feet swollen? That's exactly what they're looking for. Sorry if this bursts a bubble, but just in case the opportunity ever arises, I wanted you to know what you might be in for. There is a reason why you can sell dirty socks on the internet. Anyway, love your podcast. Keep up the amazing work. Thank you for showing so many of us the wonderful world of literary analysis. I can sell my socks.
I was about to say, this is a missed opportunity.
Wait, what? I'm fine selling my socks.
I can sell my socks.
Yeah. Because, like, we've talked about selling...
This is our takeaway.
Because, like, we've talked about selling...
Feet pics.
Well, underwear.
Also that.
And that one I get is weird. Because it's, like, weird. I support it. Like, anything you guys want to sell.
I don't know if I could do it.
I support all sex work. But...
I support anyone who feels comfortable enough to do it.
Absolutely. Go forth. But I can understand where I would feel like... No, but that's me.
Yeah.
That's my insides.
Yeah.
I get that. Feet socks.
Sweaty
day after Disneyland socks.
Oh, nasty.
I would gladly sell those.
Yeah. Yeah.
We should really look into this.
I want to understand the childhood trauma that was caused on the man who wants to have sex because your feet are swollen and dirty and smelly.
Okay. You know, I was about to start, be like, hey, we don't kink shame here.
I'm not kink shaming.
And no, I know you're not. Feet fetish is actually a very common fetish. It's one of the top fetishes.
Yeah.
But you're right. But the question of swollen feet, that's the other, to your point of like, what is it that swollen feet does it for you? Because I get the concept of like, you know, feet I mean, I don't personally get it, but I get it, where there's something that you're attracted to. But then what is it that makes you attracted to something that's swollen and dirty?
Yeah, like, and toe fungus.
Oh, no.
And smelly, like, and that's what I don't understand. And I'm not trying to shame anybody who might enjoy that. But swollen feet are really uncomfortable.
Yeah, like, do you want to de-swell them? Or do you want, like, and also, like, what do you want with my swollen feet? Do you want to, like, massage them?
Or do you want me to jerk you off with them?
Yeah, because I just need more context on what my dirty and swollen feet are doing for you. And how do we sell our socks?
Well, Ray, you are a real one for divulging all this information.
Seriously.
I'm really, really glad that this is not what I have to deal with in my relationship.
You know, as someone who's still single, beggars can't be choosers.
Fair. You know what? Kudos to the people who can be honest about their kinks.
Truth.
Because not everyone, and myself included.
Yeah, yeah.
Can, like, is ready to be like, this is exactly what I want.
I think that's absolutely fair. And I think that, like, I know I haven't been able to be fully expressive. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, like, some of the reasons why women like reading smut. Mm-hmm. Where do we necessarily want haunting Adeline? Maybe not. But does it kind of, like, make us think, you know, I might be willing to, like, dabble?
And or like, that, oh, maybe my kink isn't that bad.
Yeah.
Like, normalize the kinks.
Normalize the kinks. And, you know, women, we should ask for sex.
The way we want it.
In the way that we want it. And men, you should
give it to us.
Yeah.
And female partners.
Give it to us.
Yeah.
It's, give it.
Doesn't matter what your gender
consensually
is. Consensually. Consensually give us what we want.
This is, I'm just going to read a nice email.
Because we never do that.
We never read the nice emails.
We never do.
Because Amy used to select them.
And I would only read the things that weren't us self-congratulating. Yeah,
she would like really black those out.
I didn't want people to think we were tooting our own horn.
I've had some drinks. Let's toot it.
Okay, do it.
I just like to feel good. Let me have something. I just started listening to you ladies on Audible because you can listen to us on Audible.
Yes,
I forgot. With Sarah J. Maas's Crescent City series, and I just love your podcasts. They are totally amazing. I just started listening to the ACOTAR series, and let me tell you, I am in love with you. Not literally. You did not have to add that. Ouch.
No. What if I want you to be in love with me and stalk me?
In love with me.
Come find me. Don't tell my girlfriend but said that.
That was a joke. Please, no one actually do that. The view you give and deep thoughts to the series are amazing. You've definitely gained a follower. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
That's so sweet. This one comes from Erica. Finally finished House of Flame and Shadow and listening to that episode, Jack is talking about final battle vibes. All I can think about is final battle vibes TM, now sold by Sexy Chicken Lingerie in Valaris.
Oh, that would totally be like a bondage set.
Oh my god, Sexy Chicken son like goes into like leather.
Oh, yes.
Final battle whips. Vibes. Oh my god. This is like the sexy, I mean, this is the like the kinky lingerie
yeah,
side.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is the there's a secret door
the back room door where it's like up front everyone's like, "Oh, this is so sexy," but then like the you know, Sexy Chicken winks at you and I was like, I got the good stuff in the back.
And Azrael's there.
And it's battle vibes. Final battle vibes. Because it's the final battle vibe, so it's like extra sexy.
Well, yeah.
There's nothing sexier than a final battle.
Okay.
What other battles are sexier?
I agree.
Yeah,
You're always right.
Thank you. Thank you. There's final battles are the sexiest battles. Everyone knows. The next one comes from Kate. Hi, guys. I love the podcast and look forward to it every week. I had a thought about Hunt's character and how it evolves after you guys discuss consistent character development in SJM books. When the White Raven gets bombed in book one, Hunt removes Bryce as soon as possible in case there's a second bomb. But as a member of the 33rd, he probably should have stayed to help people and work out what's happened, like Flynn, Tristan, and Rune. I think that this is an early indicator of what we'll see in book two, where Hunt always wants to put Bryce's safety over helping others. Just thought it was interesting and also impressed by SJM having sowed those seeds so early on. Thank you both for doing this podcast. Kate.
I totally agree. I really admire SJM's ability to really understand her characters,
yeah,
get in their head, and create consistent actions. And yep, even though it's never a slap in the face for us, it is totally on brand for Hunt. And for me, it all stems back to Shahar. It stems back to the fact that his mother died, yeah, while he was not home.
He is the king of mommy issues.
He is. And so, yes, he's going to prioritize the female in his life.
Yep. Ooh. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, SJM is fucking good at that.
It is good because it's like, you know, when Hunt goes and whisks Bryce away, you don't even question it.
No, because that's exactly what he should have done.
But in actuality, like, Kate's right. He should have gone and stayed and helped other people.
It's like if you're certified in CPR, you have to help someone.
That's why I haven't gotten certified.
Yeah, now, because you can be prosecuted if you don't help people, yeah, who are in need.
And I also do want to let people know, I haven't gotten certified because of laziness. Not because I haven't wanted. My certification
expired.
You had one?
I used to work at a swim school.
How long did you have it for?
For as long as it was valid. Maybe 5 years. I don't remember.
We should do it.
Sure.
But then we have to help.
No, I don't want to be responsible.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair.
That's why risky. Doctors have to help. That's why they ask, is a doctor on board?
That's why I can't get a PhD.
It's not what I meant. Okay. The one other thing I would say about this that makes sense for Hunt is it's not like he's part of the 33rd by choice. He's not.
Yeah.
He's not part of a legion that protects the city because he believes in protecting the city.
Yep.
Right? So that's another element of it. Even if he's not 100% in love with Bryce at the moment of the White Raven bombing, he has no real loyalty to the 33rd. So no wonder why he's, like, not committed to his post.
Yeah.
Whereas Rune and the other Fae are.
Yep.
Because they've made a profession out of it.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
I mean, Hunt has gone out of his way to find little tiny digs against them.
Against the 33rd.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, he cares about Bryce, but it extra helps that it goes against the 33rd.
Absolutely.
We're going to do a little hippity-hop to ACOTAR.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Put on your ACOTAR goggles.
I don't know if I can. I don't know where they are.
We lost them. This comes from Chelsea. I'm just catching up on the podcast now. I joined late, and after I read the whole SJM universe, I wanted to say I adore you both. Thank you.
Thank you.
Additionally, I'm currently listening to ACOWAR Season 3, Episode 4, and have another point of view on Feyre and Lucien. I think rather than a mother-son dynamic, the two are very similar and mirror each other in the way that Rhys and Tamlin do. Both were the youngest child and left to their own devices. Both had a break with their family, Lucien's lover being murdered and Feyre having to provide for her family by hunting. This alone isolated them from the people who were innately supposed to love them. While Lucien's mom loved him, how much did she show it? Could it be similar to Feyre's father? Then they both become refugees who find themselves with Tamlin. Tamlin's love is violent and dangerous, and did not teach either how to love. While Feyre ultimately breaks away and learns love, Lucien is still grappling with his loyalty to Tamlin, which has existed for hundreds of years. Feyre felt abandoned when Lucien didn't help her under the mountain, or afterwards with Tamlin, and he felt abandoned when she willingly left, effectively giving up on him as well. I think the reason they can't be friends in a meaningful way is they both struggle with trust and love as well as how to manage their emotions. Feyre had the opportunity to grow while Lucien may just be getting that now with Jurien and Vasa. I think we will see a more earnest friendship in books to come when they can see their similarities gaining compassion for one another. Lulu. They wrote Lulu forever. Plus, I can't forget when SJM commented on a post that Lucien was originally meant for Nesta, but then she saw how much growth and healing he and Elaine had to do together. I think the next book will show his truest colors.
Wait, SJM said that?
Yeah, you didn't know that?
I did not know that.
Originally, because fire.
That makes sense.
And Nesta was fire.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. But I didn't know about the second part of like how much healing that him and Elaine had to do together. But I know I didn't see that one, that part, but I did see the Nesta and Lucien.
I could see how Elaine and Lucien needed to do healing together because they are the ones that are always forgotten.
Yeah.
So I can see that. Not that I'm pro them to being together, but I understand. I think Feyre wants to empathize and grow her connection with Lucien. Mm-hmm. If nothing else, they have commonalities in the fact that they were both abused by Tamlin.
Yeah.
Lucien's not there yet.
No.
I think he feels abandoned.
I love the way that Chelsea pointed it out. I do see similarities with the two. Uh-huh. I do enjoy the mirroring that she pointed out.
Yeah, I never would have maybe put it in those terms.
Yeah, and I think we talk about mirroring way more in Crescent City than we did in ACOTAR.
Yeah, in Wings and Ruin.
Yeah, and I think if we had, I would definitely like look at that more. Mm-hmm. But if Feyre equals Tamlin, or no, if the amaretto, guys. If Feyre equals Lucien, mm-hmm. Tamlin equals Tamlin, mm-hmm. Elaine equals Rhys?
Maybe.
Yeah. That was my Ariana Grande impression. Or did you think Ariana walked in through that door? Don't worry, guys. It's me.
I'm going to have to think about this more, about the Lucien-Feyre connection.
I mean, I love the idea that they are both youngest siblings who kicked out and stuff. Yeah.
Refugees.
I do think that Feyre took on responsibility while Lucien ran from it.
That's a good point. Well, he took on the responsibility of being Tamlin's emissary.
Yeah, but that's a cushy job.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, and he didn't necessarily run. Okay, before people are like, he didn't run. He was kicked out. Yes. But let's keep in mind, when we meet Lucien in ACOTAR, he is a bitch boy.
Yeah.
Feyre notices that he just likes his own looks. And, you know, he talks a lot about, like, are the human boys like us? Are we not pretty enough for you? Like, I feel like SJ makes a very clear point that he is not a warrior. He is a pretty boy.
Yeah. Who wears ornate weapons that he doesn't even know how to use them. I think I will say, at a bare minimum, Lucien and Feyre had love taken from them or not provided appropriately to them, and therefore accepted the love of a man who couldn't love properly.
Yeah.
And that, in and of itself, is enough to bind them and allow them to have empathy for one another. I don't think Lucien is far along enough in his healing journey for him to appreciate how similar he and Feyre are.
I think they were both hurt by one another, and while Feyre has moved past that, Lucien hasn't.
Yep, I agree. And he resents her for that.
Yeah.
He resents her for moving past it, and he resents her for being further in her journey.
And I'm sure on some level he also resents her for having a home for Elaine that Elaine doesn't, like, feel so comfortable and happy in.
Yeah.
You know, like, but also you don't want to resent her because Elaine's happy, but at the same time, why would she leave that place? And Lucien even says that.
Yeah.
When he shows up to the Night Court for the first time, he looks outside and he's like, something, 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 subtext, why would Elaine ever leave?
Yeah, exactly.
Listen to that season. I can't remember. It is a bummer. I can't wait for the next ACOTAR book.
I know.
Every once in a while people like do reach out and be like, who do you think the point of view is going to be? I'm still convinced that it is going to be a multi point of view, not first person, third person. And I think it's going to be Lucien, Elaine, Moore, and maybe a fourth one.
If there's a fourth one, it's Azrael, because we've actually gotten his point of view before.
I want you to know, I didn't mean anything that I just said. If it's going to be anyone, it's going to be Azrael, Lucien, Elaine.
I could almost see it being...
And more. Why not? I had some drinks.
So I think there are four on the table, and I suspect only three will be chosen.
Okay.
So I think the four on the table are Azrael, Moore, Lucien, Elaine.
Moore's going to get cut.
Moore might be peppered in there. I don't think it's going to be her story. I think she gets her own story. But it's still possible we get some of her point of view, because we've had some of her point of view before. I think it's going to be Azrael, Moore, and Lucien. I don't think we get Elaine's point of view.
Damn. Ready for this one?
Yeah.
I feel like, and I don't know if this is what I think it is, but I just like a spicy thought. What if it was Azrael and Elaine, but neither of them end up together? It's both their point of views.
And they end up not together.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could totally see.
That would be a fun story to write.
That would be a fun story to write. My heart will be broken.
Yeah, but I'd love it.
Yeah, I know.
And then I'd drink your tears.
for once you'd be like, let's take a picture while you're crying and put it on Instagram.
Finally, one of the other one will cry. It's, I will say, the amount of people who reached out saying like that they cried when I cried, it made me feel good. Some people said that they didn't cry in the episode until they heard me cry. And then hearing me cry made them cry. And I wrote back like, good. Let us all cry.
Did anybody laugh at Jack crying like I did?
No, Amy. No one did.
Am I the only asshole?
No one else cried. Or laughed. No one else reached out and was like, I laughed at you, Jack. Everyone was like, I too sobbed.
Well, that wraps up Tuesday's episode. Stick around for Thursday's episode where we continue to discuss listener thoughts and emails. Thank you for listening to part one of this week's episode of Book Talk for Book Talk. We encourage you to rate and subscribe to our show on your preferred podcast listening platform. Tune in Thursday for part two, where we finish covering this week's chapters. All right, I don't have to do anything except react, right?
So you better do it well.
I mean, I don't doubt. No! I didn't finish my sentence. Excuse you. I don't doubt the sugar and the alcohol will help.
Take a shot every time there's an airplane. We'd be destroyed.
Yeah, we would.
Should have made this a drinking game the whole time.
Honestly, I was just like, this is now a drinking game.
Yeah. Vroom, vroom. Vroom, vroom. Vroom, vroom, vroom. Make my heart go boom, boom. Boom. Boom.